Brought to you by the Indie Filmmaking Guide, The Real Truth by Reed Martin. Available as a paperback on Amazon.com or as an ebook on iTunes.
You memorized that whole sentence.
I'm a pitch lady now. Just like Jacqueline Suzanne.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to sing it. Like, I want you to, why am I blanking on her name?
You want to jingle?
I'm blanking on her name from It's Always Fair Weather, who sings, oh. Thanks a lot, but no thanks.
Yes.
What's her name?
I knew it. Dolores Gray.
Dolores Gray. Remember before that song, she sings the jingle for the soap?
Yes.
I want you to sing that sentence as a jingle.
Yeah, no.
Do it.
No, it doesn't rhyme. It's one sentence. No.
You have six more tries.
You know what? If they want singing, it costs extra.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
You do that for free all the time.
For your ears only. People, you want a singing commercial? Talk to my agent.
No.
Ask my agent.
Reed Martin is paying for you to say that sentence.
Yes.
I want you to sing it.
No.
Reed is not asking you to sing it.
Then you can pay me extra.
Who cooks your dinners? Who irons your professor shirts? That would be me.
Oh, we're not playing that game.
This is not a game. This is real life. And I need you to start singing that sentence.
That's not happening.
Meanwhile, Reed Martin is listening going, no, don't sing it. Just say it.
Please.
Talk about the title of my book.
Yes. We should also incidentally mention...
What are we?
Yes, this is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
Yeah, a podcast of the cinema.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic on What the Flick on the YouTube network The Young Turks.
I'm Dave White, film critic, almost ready to return to linoleum-knife.com.
So you keep saying.
No. This is for real.
Okay.
Because big projects, there are three of them. One of them is coming to a close, which means that I can begin juggling back into the mix.
All right.
Writing reviews.
Your public will be thrilled to know.
Yeah. Both of them. Until then, guess what we're going to do?
What?
Guess what's going to happen?
Well, there's so many exciting things to be announcing. I'm not even sure which we're talking about.
I'm going to just announce one of them.
Okay.
Right now.
Go for it.
LKTV.
Mm-hmm.
This week.
Much discussed.
Scoffed at, actually, by at least one listener
mm-hmm.
who said, oh, if it ever happens.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we didn't do it soon after we thought it up. But we've been planning it.
Eventually.
Thinking about it.
Eventually.
Now it's going to happen.
LKTV, which is going to be Dave and me talking about television every week.
In the same way that we talk about film.
Exactly, yeah. Our tiny corner of television, by the way. Because if I've learned anything from What the Flick, it's the second you start recapping one show, 10 people want to know why you aren't doing 20 other shows.
Guess why?
We're going to talk about the
shows. We're not insects with 100 eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to talk about the shows we watch, and you're going to like it, and that's it. And eventually, in the very near future, the LKTV show will be available only to our subscribers, to the
yes.
people who are giving us money to help keep this show going.
Don't confuse them so much with that right now.
This show will continue to be free and will always be free. LKTV will eventually be only for subscribers, but like savvy drug dealers, we're going to give you a taste for free.
Yeah. I figure we'll do LKTV for free for, you know,
a few weeks.
November, December, you know, whatever.
Something like that.
And then
The wall comes down.
That's right. But yeah, it begins this week.
Yeah.
And you're going to get, if you're already subscribing via whatever,
iTunes
or however you get this show automatically dumped into your device, LKTV is going to get dumped into your device because of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Wednesday it begins.
Right. So that's happening.
Wednesday.
Next week
yeah.
is the fifth anniversary of this program.
Oh, another announcement.
Shocking as it is.
5 years.
As inept as we still are at doing this, we've been doing this 4 or 5 years.
We're great. You know why I say that?
Why is that?
Not because we're technically proficient.
No, heavens no.
Not because we sound wonderful all the time with noises and...
And pronunciations.
And bumpings. Yes. And the fan noise. Mm-hmm. And the street noise.
And the dogs.
And you sounding quieter than me sometimes, which is weird, and I've been noticing that lately.
I'm trying to reach equilibrium.
And, but because... I listen to other podcasts sometimes.
Uh-huh.
We're better. That's all.
Than some, maybe.
No, all of them.
No, that I know that's not true. Anyway, so next week we're celebrating our 5th anniversary with a very special guest, a very close, dear friend of the show.
Yeah. The lady who kind of invented... Linoleum knife.
I wasn't going to say who, but I guess we're going to now.
She did invent it.
Pretty much. We didn't know what a podcast was until we met her.
I mean, we did, because we watched The L Word.
Yeah, but we were kind of vague on
that. Alice had the podcast on The L Word.
We were vague on the concept.
It was such a major podcast. Not such a major podcast that Alice had on The L Word. First of all, it happened at KCRW.
No, I think she was on KCRW first, and then she started a podcast.
Oh.
I think when the show started, she was just a KCRW, like...
All I know is that Alice was on KCRW at the beginning of the show and then on a podcast at the end of the show. Uh-huh. And at the very beginning of the show, she invented the sex...
Wall
of everyone that... all the lesbians that had sex with all the other lesbians.
Uh-huh.
And when you walk into KCRW's studios, I am not making this up. When we go on Press Play...
Maybe that was the inspiration.
It might have been.
That real wall.
When we go on Press Play with Madeline Brand on KCRW to talk about movies, when you walk into the KCRW studio, there's an entire giant wall filled with...
Polaroids.
Polaroid pictures of people who have worked there, who work there, who have guested. Like, some of them are famous musicians.
Yeah, they've come in and played
authors,
live on Morning Becomes Eclectic,
you know,
actors, or whatever.
Whoever shows up at KCRW... Who they take the picture of, I guess.
Yeah, no one's ever asked to pull
it. No, our picture's not on there. There's a wall, and all those pictures are up, and all these little circular...
Red lines are connecting them.
Are connecting one to another, to another, to another, to another. Probably haphazardly.
Probably.
But the idea is that there's this connectivity to all of these people.
Every single time
we
walk into KCRW,
that's right.
Without fail,
uh-huh.
Dave White will stop.
Yep.
Point to the wall and say, sex wall. It's not a sex wall.
It's the sex wall of KCRW.
No, it's not a sex wall. The L Word had a sex wall. KCRW does not have a sex wall.
The chart. They called it the chart.
The chart. That's it. And that was also the name of her show. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, as usual, we're veering off topic. Next week, we celebrate our 5th anniversary.
We're going to talk a lot about the L Word on LKTV.
Yes, even though it hasn't been on for years. And Gray Drake will be joining us as sort of the mother superior of this program. She really brought it into being in a lot of ways.
You on the Popcorn Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And then
she had me on
the Popcorn Mafia.
And then we both went on.
And then we both went on the Popcorn Mafia. And then the Popcorn Mafia went away.
Yes.
And Gray became the Gray Drake
that
she is now.
Mm-hmm.
Making Ryan Gosling laugh with her every utterance.
Yes.
And... But she invented us.
Yeah.
Her old equipment.
We're still using it.
Yeah.
So we're thrilled to have her on to mark this moment. And of course, obviously, we couldn't have gotten to 5 years without all of you and your support and keeping this thing afloat. We really appreciate it. It's nice to know that we're not just talking to ourselves, because we do plenty of that already.
We're kind of doing a lot of that, actually.
So what we would love to have, because we are... You know, I'm such an inept editor. It's not like I'm going to go through and pull clips or something.
No.
I would love
It
would be a lot of work.
Work.
Yes. I would love for listeners to write in with your favorite moments of this show from the last 5 years. We've already gotten a couple of submissions. We appreciate them. If there's a thing that you recall that made you laugh, or the moment that, like, you decided, hey, I'm going to subscribe to this show, I really like it, or something that made you angry, or that you made you think about something in a different way, or
that
whatever.
Time you were like, Dave White is right, and I'm going to watch O Hussard Baltazar.
Or that, for instance. Yeah, so we would love to hear any kind of memories you have about the show in its first 5 years. You can send those to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com, and we will share selected ones on next week's show when we do our 5th anniversary thing, because not much opens on Halloween week. It actually times out perfectly.
not much opened this week either.
Right. Successfully anyway. So that'll be a cool thing. And then also, we meant to do it last week and we forgot. We're going to announce our next Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episode.
Yeah.
Snoopy Come Home.
Right.
Because the new Peanuts movie is coming out. And
I told someone that last night at the drive-in.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, oh, and I was like, what's your problem?
What was the problem?
I don't know. Huh. I was like, that movie's really good.
That movie's great. And as Dave and I have been saying all along, once they announced this new Peanuts movie, it had better be melancholy.
Yeah.
Or it's not Peanuts.
At least ish.
Yeah.
It had better be
There better be some failure in it.
Yeah. I mean, you cannot have that. You cannot have a Peanuts thing without Charlie Brown, particularly.
Yes.
Failing at something in a major way.
Yeah. That's the point. So we're fans of the 1972 Snoopy Come Home, which was the second of the original four feature films that were made based on the Charles Schulz comic strip. And very soon we'll be, I think next weekend, we're going to be recording our commentary track for that. And as soon as that goes up, we will, make sure that you know about it so that you can download it. And, you know, if you want to watch it listen to it while you're watching Snoopy Come Home, great. If you want to just listen to it like it's a regular episode, you can always do that. Right now we have our Gentlemen Prefer Blondes episode up, and that's a fun one. And again, you can use it as a commentary track with the film, or you can just listen to it like an extra long episode of the show where we only talk about one movie. Either way. And then there's the other big piece of it. You're not yes-anding me at all. You're just sitting there like a lump, not helping.
Sometimes I get so enchanted by your face.
Please. You are going into your internal safe place and making lists or something. You're not even listening to what I'm saying. Why don't you share our other big piece of news for this week?
What is it?
Your audiobook?
Oh, yeah, that. So my audiobook, you can pre-order it now.
Yes. That's it? That's all you've got? Dave White's memoir, Exile in Guyville, is very close to being finished and ready to send out. And
it is the delivery date is yes. November 5th.
Yes.
There is a Tumblr page up right now, Exile in Guyville book.tumblr.com. You can pre-order it. It's pay what you want.
Yes.
Which I've learned this week causes some people to have anxiety. I'm not kidding. I've had two people come to me and say, it makes me nervous to have a pay what you want staring me in the face.
Because they think they'll be branded a cheapskate or something?
Yeah. And I said, the reason I'm doing a pay what you want is for the very specific purpose of allowing folks that don't have a lot of money to have this audiobook.
Right.
It's a dollar. Like,
if you have a dollar, it's a dollar.
If you have a dollar, it's a dollar.
If you have $1,000, it's $1,000.
And so, I don't care how much money you have, give me some of it.
Give me it.
So, I've had two people pre-order it, and they haven't done the dollar. They've done $2. Something was preventing them from being a full
$1
person. Yeah. And so everyone else is paying what they normally would pay for an audiobook or more, which is freaking me out. But that makes me nervous. like when they pay too much, I'm like, oh no, it better be great. Like, or I'm doomed. And so the
nobody held a gun to their head.
No, they didn't.
They made that choice themselves.
We'll provide the link.
Okay.
On the everywhere.
It's already on our Facebook page, and I think we'll tweet it. We'll do all the things. But yeah, Exile in Guyville book.tumblr.com.
That is it.
Okay. So
what movies did we not see this week, Alonzo?
Well, apparently, like most of America, we didn't see several films that opened this weekend because there was the blood ran in the streets with a lot of these new releases.
In our defense, one of them was I Smile Back, which is a small release, and neither one of us have seen it yet, but I will because I'm interested in seeing
Sarah Silverman
do a straight up full dramatic role. Although she had a small dramatic role, just like Seth Rogen,
right? In Take This Waltz.
But
she's a lead in this one.
Yeah, I have not seen Nasty Baby.
I have not either. Actually, it was one of those Outfest movies that was already programmed out of Sundance, and then I just never got around to seeing
it. I hear it's really good. I'll be watching that.
Mm-hmm. We both need to see Room.
We still haven't seen Room.
Yeah.
We have both not yet seen Suffragette.
Correct.
Which opened on 4 screens nationwide this week.
Yes.
And will go wider.
Yes.
Next week or the week after or something like that.
We'll
get to that because that's going to be a big
absolutely
Oscar-y kind of thing.
I have seen Laurie Anderson's Heart of a Dog.
And I will catch up on it and
we'll talk about it after you do. That opened in New York.
Neither one of us have seen The Last Witch Hunter and we're not going to.
Ever.
Because I don't
care.
Yeah. You saw Paranormal and I did not talk about it right now.
Brother.
I've reached peak paranormal activity. I'm saturated with all the paranormal activities. I don't need any more. And because I had the choice, I said, nah. And you went with Bibbs.
Yeah, I had to go.
Tim Grierson.
And Andrew Barker.
Well, tell me what happened.
This should tell you how much Paramount was excited about having critics see it. They invited us all to the premiere that happened Thursday night at 8 o'clock at the Chinese. And then Tim pointed out, we could just go see it at 7 o'clock at the AMC Century City if we just buy tickets and then avoid having to go to a premiere. And we were all, that's a great idea. And so we did that. I had to go back and reread my reviews of the last 3 Paranormal Activities to even remember what's going on. You know, it's such a nothing mythology that they keep coming back to in these movies as though it mattered. And it's funny because this is the 6th Paranormal Activity movie, but Paramount keeps calling it the 5th one. Like they're pretending the Marked Ones was somehow
this other franchise,
off canon, but it's not because it totally circles back around into the old same old same old. So, in this one, it's 2013, and it's this super bland house in Santa Rosa, California, and guess what? They find a box of videotapes. What?
Right.
And on these tapes are little Christy and Katie developing their, ooga booga psychic.
Bloody Mary.
Exactly.
Bloody
powers.
Mary.
And there's a little girl in the house, and she's having these conversations with this invisible thing called Toby. And then the camera that they found with the video cassettes has like...
Toby Hooper?
Yes, Toby Hooper. has twice as many picture tubes, and apparently it can photograph the ghost dimension, which is this sort of blobby ectoplasm floating in the middle, midair.
So Slimer,
basically
from Ghostbusters.
So boring this movie because you love to point out how I'm such a wimp and how I'm so easily gotten.
Wimp isn't the word I use.
This is a clean podcast. You like to talk about how I'm so easily gotten by a jump scare in a horror movie.
Yep,
I saw all of them coming in this one.
Did you still go ooh?
No.
No,
I'm the canary in a coal mine. So if the gas doesn't get me, like it's not gonna, this is not scary,
right? No, the real canary in the coal mine is Alinda.
Oh, that's true. She is a scaredy cat.
She wasn't there.
She was not. She moved seats and came and sat next to me during Crimson Peak.
And Crimson Peak is
another
even
movie
a
that's not
movie.
All really that scary either. Yeah. I know. So. You know, this one's in 3D, even though it's still a found footage movie. And but they only use the 3D a couple of times. And there's one part that I found really annoying where a little girl, like, who starts getting sort of semi-possessed at this point, in crayon draws this, like, rectangle of runes on the wall above her bed that's basically just some sort of satanic thing to open a portal. And the parents are like, huh. And they know what it is, like they've looked it up online or whatever, but like at no point does anybody pull out a bottle of Fantastic and some paper towels and try and get rid of it. It just sits there until eventually, oh, what do you know? The portal opens. That my favorite heckle during the movie was when the wall starts cracking and the portal starts opening. I turned to Tim Grierson and I went, "Hey, Kool-Aid." Yeah, this movie, Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, don't bother.
Paranormal Activity, colon, Hey, Kool-Aid.
Exactly. And I think, I've been seeing in places that it's supposed to be the last one.
Let it be the last one.
Right. You know, the first one, I really love.
I really love the first one because it's about, to me, it's about more than just, you know, spooky noises down the hall.
It builds a sense of dread. I'll give you that.
It builds a sense of dread, but it also serves as, you know, an analogous story about, you know, people stuck in a suburban home that isn't a safe place. And it came out at the time that the housing market had completely collapsed and people were just
being underwater,
forced out of their homes and into these, you know, tent cities in Sacramento, if you remember that.
Oh, right, right, right.
And I remember at the time thinking, they maybe didn't mean this, but this is totally an anxiety movie about losing your home.
Yeah, the idea of the home itself being the source of the horror.
Yeah, and so, you know, not only that, but it was legitimately frightening. And so,
I tell you,
watched it on TV.
I saw it on TV
3 years after the fact, or whatever.
Yeah, like a year later, yeah. and it did not have the same impact. But even then, I still, like I said, I see the idea that it has a cool sort of mounting tension, where by the time you get to like night number eight, you're like, oh, now what? You know?
Yeah. Whereas I remember in the first screening, the press screening for the first film. Mm-hmm. Each time, the screen would say, "Night number four." The audience would be going, "You know,
yeah." And
but
this,
now it's a trope that in this film has been used, again and again.
This,
and
by
again,
the time you get to like night number seven, you're like, "Oh God, when's this going to be more over?" Yeah. And the movie's 85 minutes,
right.
And I was still like, "Are we close to done yet?" Yeah, it's terrible.
Has the president initiated ghost protocol yet?
Not soon enough.
When will he?
And by the way, go to Crave Online and read the piece that Bibbs wrote about the fact that in the middle of the closing credits for Paranormal Activity, where if maybe you were feeling
that
kind of
infuriated.
If you were
me
feeling
too.
Kind of spooked by it and the music's being like, you know, and, you know, there's a sort of a mood of creepiness. And then suddenly, blah, it's a commercial for the Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse trailer in the middle of the closing credits. And now back to the closing credits. The craziest thing I've ever seen.
Key second group. Seriously.
Yeah, it was...
you guys, key second grade.
Let's not make a habit of this, Hollywood, please. That was tacky.
You also saw Rock the Casbah, and I did not, and I am not.
Yeah, no, don't. There's no point in seeing it. So this, I did not realize until afterwards, this movie's based on a documentary about a real person.
Right.
The real person is the singing Afghani woman who risks her life to go on television in a country where hardline Muslims think that women who are entertained in public should be like stoned to death. That's a story. That's a character that might be interesting to follow.
Yep.
This is not that movie. This is a movie about a white guy who goes to Afghanistan.
She's a girl.
Exactly. And, you know, find some redemption.
She's the wrong color. And a girl.
And a girl. Bill Murray doing very Bill Murray, which he's good at. Bill Murray is the best Bill Murray we have. But that's kind of all this movie has going for it. He's this small-time, over-the-hill rock promoter. He claims to have discovered Madonna and claims to have known Stevie Nicks and stuff. And he operates out of this seedy, like, Van Nuys motel and, you know, tells people he's going to represent them and they write him checks. And
And then he doesn't.
And then he doesn't. Right. The one person who seems, he seems to actually have in his stable is Zooey Deschanel, who's like his secretary. And he like gets her these gigs, like singing covers of Meredith Brooks in like some nightclub in the valley somewhere. So one night, some guy in the audience is like, "Hey, you should book her in Afghanistan. That's where all the money is, and you know you can tour these bases and open for Solange and whatever." So they're like, "Okay, great, we'll do that." So they fly to Kabul, and of course, there's bombs going off and goats
in
the
street. Is Solange in the movie?
Solange is not in the movie. Sorry. Sorry to disappoint. And Zooey Deschanel, getting one good look at Kabul, like gets out of there as fast as she can and takes Bill Murray's passport, wallet, and plane ticket with her because plot reasons.
Right.
He winds up getting stuck running errands for these idiotic American arms runner gun runners played by Scott Conn and Danny McBride, winds up in this Pashtun village, and he hears this woman sing, and she's amazing, and he figures that she's his meal ticket, and he's got to get her onto Afghan Star, which is like the Afghani American Idol. It's a white savior movie. It's right. A movie about a guy that should be about a woman. It's a movie about the wrong person. Like, the, you know, she's not even the interesting one. Right. And in fact, the very cagey Reed Martin wrote me and pointed out how basically it's the same plot as Salvador.
Cagey?
Yeah. He's savvy about the business.
Canny.
Canny. Fine. Okay. He's canny. And he's uncanny, but he's also canny. Pointed out that it's the same plot as Salvador. Like you know, boozy white guy gets stuck in war zone, tries to do the one right thing of his life, you know. But it's not even, it's not remotely as interesting as Salvador. And it's just so phony, and the tone is so all over the place. And
why is Bill Murray doing this?
I have a hunch that Bill Murray really wants an Academy Award.
Do you think?
And Wes Anderson.
Do you think he cares about that?
I think he does.
I don't think he cares about that.
Look at the face when they cut back to him on the years that he's been nominated and didn't win.
Wait, how many times has he been nominated for an Oscar?
He was nominated for Lost in Translation.
Lost in Translation. Anything else?
I'm going to say something else. I think he was expecting to get nominated for Rushmore and didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so, like, since Wes Anderson only makes so many movies...
I don't want Bill Murray to care about this.
I mean, neither, but I think he does. I think that's the only reason why we get something like St. Vincent, you know, or Hyde Park on Hudson. So, I think this is in that category.
Hyde Park on Hudson.
Ugh, I know. It's directed by Barry Levinson.
You guys watch Hyde Park on Hudson.
No.
Let me just finish my sentence.
All right.
Watch Hyde Park on Hudson up until the part... Or Laura Linney
gives FDR a handy in a car.
Gives him the treatment, the old fashioned.
An old fashioned.
In the car. And then you can stop watching it.
Yeah. Because that's the highlight.
Because that's the best. It's the best part of the movie. It's the funniest part of the movie. It's the only memorable part of the movie. And it's deeply also uncomfortable.
Disturbing.
To watch. Recommend that movie up to that moment.
Anyway, Rock the Casbah, it's directed by Barry Levinson, who, as somebody pointed out, you know, his one good political comedy was Wag the Dog, but that had a David Mamet script, and without David Mamet he makes stuff like Man of the Year and an Everlasting Peace. You know, his political satire is not his strong suit. And it's written by Mitch Glazer, who co-wrote Scrooged and is like a Bill Murray guy from way back.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that Scrooged.
You know, this is just a mess. Kate Hudson plays an actual hooker with a heart of gold.
really?
Yes. And there's a part of the film where for no apparent reason, she's like being super nice to Bill Murray and helping him out. She lets... The Afghani singing woman stay in her double wide trailer where she is now no longer turning tricks. And so here you've got a woman who's an actual prostitute, and you've got a devout Muslim who just wants to sing in public, and for that is being called a prostitute by people.
And that's what the movie should be about.
Those two women might have
about those two women.
Those two women might have an interesting conversation. Do they speak to each other in this movie? They do not. I'm not a hardcore believer in the Bechdel test, but really, no woman in this movie talks to another woman in this movie.
I'm a hardcore believer in smashing the patriarchy, though.
Well, and, no, absolutely. And I'm a hardcore believer in Alison Bechdel herself.
And, well, yeah. And so that's stupid.
Yeah, Rock the Casbah is a pain. As I said on Facebook, I'm with Sharif on this one.
Gem and the Holograms. We saw it.
We did. I've seen it twice now.
We alone have seen Gem and the Holograms.
Gem and the Holograms, the poor things, made a per-screen average this week of like $550.
Poor Gem and the Holograms.
One of the worst least successful wide release openings in movie history, apparently.
I had no dog in the hunt.
Yeah, me neither.
For Gem and the Holograms.
Had never seen the cartoon until Bibbs made me last year.
I was already an adult.
Yeah.
When it came on television. I was 20.
I was at least in college.
Yeah, I was 20, I think, when it started on being a cartoon for children. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I would see it in passing on afternoon television, and I would look at it for a minute and think, this is stupid,
and it's one of those,
and just keep going.
It was one of those Reagan era cartoons of like, let's sell some toys here, right? You know,
Thundercats, that was my afternoon. I'd come home from class, from college, come to my house that I shared with three other dudes, get myself a bowl of cereal like I did every day after elementary school. In elementary school, come home, get a bowl of cereal, watch the Mike Douglas show. That was my afternoons as a child after school. So I continued that tradition through college, come home from class in the afternoon, get a bowl of cereal, watch what was on TV.
So as a child, you were watching a show for adults, and as an adult, you were watching a show for children.
Yes. And so I would watch either Thundercats, or I would watch Remote Control on MTV, I would watch whatever music videos happened to be on. This was the 80s.
Yes.
When they still had music videos on television. So,
did you ever see
Yo MTV Raps? That was a big hit.
Did you ever see Ituma Matamien?
Yeah.
She keeps talking about Thundercats.
Yeah. Thundercats is stupid. But I enjoyed its stupidity more than I enjoyed the stupidity of Gem and the Holograms.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't actually care that they made a Gem and the Holograms movie. I just want it to be an interesting film.
Well, okay, wait. There's two.
So keep going.
There's two things there. A, you don't care that there's a Gem and the Holograms movie. And B, you don't care that there's a Gem and the Holograms movie that plays fast and loose with the mythos of the original program.
I think Fast and Loose is generous. I think
that completely ignores.
This is the Gem and the Holograms movie that has absolutely nothing to do with Gem and the Holograms, the TV show, based on the limited information that I have.
They kept the names of things.
Yes. And then Your Mother's Cookies, what's his name?
Ryan Guzman.
Ryan Guzman, he says the thing in the middle of the movie, fame, glamour, glitter.
Fame and fashion, glitter, and yeah, whatever. Something.
He says that. They change the evil manager from a man to a woman.
Yes.
So that Juliette Lewis can be amazing.
Yes. Yes. Ice. And,
oh my God. That's the best. That's my favorite scene in the movie. She goes to Jem's house to sign her.
Yes.
And Molly Ringwald plays
Aunt Bailey.
Aunt Bailey. Molly Ringwald, by the way, who is so, like, Molly Ringwald gives one of those Beatrice Straight performances in this film, where she's on camera for maybe a cumulative total of about 8 minutes. Mm. And each one of those moments, she is being warm and good and perfect and true and saying important things like that you would want to say to anyone that you loved.
Yeah.
And every time Molly Ringwald is on screen, you're like, I love Molly Ringwald so much. And so Erica changed the character's name's changed from Eric to Erica.
Right. The yes, her.
So Erica, played by Juliette Lewis, the evil manager, comes to the house, and she, an amazing entrance. She walks up the drive. The camera
heels
is on
up.
The camera is only on her high heels as she sort of stalks up the sidewalk, kicks a skateboard out of the way, kind of stomps into the house, and is sort of like, "Hello, I'm Erica," and Molly Ringwald is like, "Can I get you some water?" And she's like, "A water would be good." And then she says, "Can I get you ice? No ice?" And she goes, "It doesn't matter. Yes, ice." And her delivery is so withering and dismissive and
entitled.
The opposite of what a human being should be. And so on the one hand, you're loving Molly Ringwald's moments as like the embodiment of what nurturing humanity should be. And then it's perfectly, and I mean perfectly balanced by Juliette Lewis's ice cold.
Withering.
Just like dripping with contempt of every human impulse. I want these two women to be in a film together on their own as other incarnations of these two characters, like buddy cops or something. I don't care what it is.
A remake of Old Acquaintance.
They're perfect. We don't get enough Molly Ringwald, period.
No, we do not.
And Juliette Lewis is, as we've discussed many times, the world's greatest Scientologist and one of my very favorite screen presences.
Yes.
And so she's incredible in this film as this bad, 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 bad person. Funny and just wrong through every moment. I like to think that maybe that might be the thing that they carried over from the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Because I've only seen the cartoon like 7 minutes cumulative. The rest of the movie is boring and low energy, and the songs are not strong, and the girls are not interesting, and it's all about friendship and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Spice World has more gravitas in that regard than this film.
I think you're too rough on it.
I need to close a curtain. You tell me why.
I think that, I mean, yes, it is not as bouncy as it could have been. But I think that the whole friendshipy stuff is an undercurrent to a lot of these movies. You know, these movies that are about girls with guitars who butt up against the music industry. You know, it's in Josie and the Pussycats. It's in We Are the Best. You know, this idea of,
however, do
we screw each other over, or do we stay true to ourselves? This movie isn't nearly as good as any of the films that just came out of my mouth. Don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But I at least felt like they were shooting for that kind of movie.
We Are the Best in Josie and the Pussycats. Understand that the lot in life of women in film is to be more concerned with their relationships than with their ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
So while We Are the Best prioritizes those friendships,
mm-hmm.
it equally prioritizes them going to that thing, going to that event at the end and shredding.
Right.
Okay.
But they can only get there after they stop fighting over the boy and
realize that the boy's not worth fighting
exactly,
over.
Exactly. That each other is more important. And that's, then they get to do the show.
Yeah.
Same thing in Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats is just straight up satire of all of it, including a satire of
that kind of movie.
A movie like Jem.
Mm.
And so I cannot think of them in the same camp.
I
don't hate this film. I just think that it has so many problems that it sabotages itself.
I think that it's trying to do some interesting things. I think the notion of, because so much of Jem, from what I've seen of it, is so 80s.
Yes.
And this one, I think, is really trying to make an effort of, like, what would this look like in the 21st century? It would be about YouTube. It would be about the internet. It would be about social media. And so the fact that they've used social media, like, they found these amazing YouTube clips of these, like, young musicians creating, like, weird percussion sounds and stuff.
Yes.
And using that in the score and intercutting it with these scenes of people running around and, like, moments of tension. I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
You know, I like some of the songs. They aren't. A lot of them are terrible. And like the song that makes her an internet sensation is completely forgettable. But there are a couple that are at least kind of catchy. None of them are Three Small Words, granted, and none of them are That Thing You Do. Yeah. And what's hard about making movies like this is that you have to.
None of them are I Hate the Sport.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Hate the Sport.
Whatever.
the tricky thing about creating songs like that for a movie like this is that not only do they have to be legitimately believable pop songs, they have to be legitimately believable pop songs that snag you on the first listen.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And these don't really do that. I grant you. But there were a couple I thought were kind of catchy. You know, there's a lot of plot devoted to a really sort of pointless, scavenger hunt, as one person put it, of like running around and putting together these instructions from their dead father. But I can't hate this movie. I think that I'm glad it exists. I wish it were better, but I think I had some fun watching it. I've seen it twice now.
I think it doesn't even get its sort of power message right. Like at the end when the Rolling Stone lady comes up to Ryan Guzman in the crowd in the final show, and she goes, "What do you call? What's the name of this band?" And they don't actually have a name yet.
And he names them Gem and the Holograms.
And he names them Gem and the Holograms. And I turned to Dennis, was with us last night at the drive-in where I saw it for the first time. Mm-hmm. You saw it at the press screening. And I turned to Dennis and I go, was that his call? Do the women not get to define? Don't they get to name themselves, the band? How about the band name the band?
Well, you know what? Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Right. So it's not good. It's not rotten. It's not deserving of the
scorn that's being heaped upon it.
And
the people who love the original cartoon, I defy you to figure out a way that you turn that into a movie in 2015.
Oh, I think you could have. You know who I think could have done it?
Sofia Coppola.
No. The guy who directed Torque and Detention. What's his name? I'm blanking on his name.
I don't remember, but I know who you mean.
But Torque and Detention are such incredible films.
Okay, maybe.
And he would have done it.
Or Lord and Miller.
Or Lord and Miller, yeah. Like, but I'm going with the Torque and Detention guy.
Something we were talking about last night, that when the stuff from our childhood started having movies made about it, the first one that I remember being a big thing that way.
Pardon me, Joseph Kahn.
Joseph Kahn, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Was The Brady Bunch. Like, we grew up on The Brady Bunch, and then when they made The Brady Bunch movie, they made a movie that mocked The Brady Bunch.
Well, it mocked...
Affectionately.
It affectionately mocked the things that were patently ridiculous about The Brady Bunch.
But they basically... Yeah. They didn't try to update it, but at the same time, they weren't reverent about it. It was basically kind
of... Can you say reverent again just like that?
Reverent.
Reverent. Yeah.
They were like... Yeah, remember this and how this didn't make any sense and how this is ridiculous, you know. And so I think,
oh, guess what? Joseph Kahn just recently directed.
He did that short Power Rangers thing that they got sued over.
Guess what else?
What else?
Taylor Swift's Bad Blood video.
Oh,
doesn't that make sense?
That makes total sense.
Yes, and
okay, yes, he could have made
what I'm saying.
He could make a gem movie that would have been better. Right?
Yeah,
I grant you that. This one's directed by John Chu, who made the insanely overrated by Bibbs and Whitney Step Up 3D.
Now we're all in a fight.
They know I think that. There are things that I found appealing in this movie.
A sweaty four-man brawl is about to break out.
There are things that I find appealing in this movie. It didn't need to run almost 2 hours.
No. I read our pal Matt Seitz's review.
Oh, yeah, where he compared it to Terrence Malick.
Well, he compared the camera work to Terrence Malick. And you were talking to me last night during the film, like, I don't see the Terrence Malick.
And okay,
I
think, apart from the part when they jump in the ocean and they're swimming in slow motion.
I think, well, yeah, there was that. But I think in the beginning of the movie, before they become a big thing, the handheld camera work gives you this sense of comfort and family and belonging, mm-hmm. that, it's actually quite beautiful to look at, and I was noticing that, and this was I broke my rule. I read Matt's review before going to see the film, mm-hmm. And I never do that usually. I never read reviews before I see things, but I didn't know when I was going to get to see it until we decided at the last minute to see it at the drive-in.
And people were talking.
And I thought, I'll just read the review. So so having that in my head, I was looking for what he was seeing, and I did see it.
Ignaty Vishnevsky's review on AV Club, he talked about how everything's so erratic and changes from scene to scene that some of the shots are accidentally beautiful. But the reason that first part is shot differently than the rest of the movie is because several of the characters are constantly documenting everything for Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
And then once they become famous, Juliette Lewis tells them, you know, we're keeping all this under wraps, no social media.
Yes.
And that's why it changes.
Yeah.
There are some thoughts in this movie's head, you know. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's not garbage. It's not great.
Yeah.
Watch it sometime, like on the television. Or your phone, I don't know. And if you're, you know, determined that it should be a cartoon, then call Joseph Kahn
and say, please,
dude, can you just remake this right now?
Well, Scott Mendelson at Forbes had a really interesting point about the unfortunately, the takeaway for this movie is going to be girl action movies based on cartoons don't work.
Right.
Even though you only gave them $5 million to make it, whereas you gave them 25 times that to make G.I. Joe and Transformers and all the other ones. And that also failed boy recaps or franchises like Hitman and Fantastic Four get a redo, and this one probably won't.
Yeah, they always... Well, there are infinite second chances for guys.
Yeah.
And that's...
You know, actually, yeah. I was thinking, this is also one of those cases where a female director might have helped.
Yeah. Wasn't there supposed to be one initially?
I think it was always John Chu.
Oh, was it?
I think he and Jason Blum, like, were so passionate about getting this made...
I see.
...that they got it made on the cheap. I mean, got this it. Is a Blumhouse movie.
Right.
You know,
and that's not their thing.
No, they're the horror people. You know.
All right. Here's the best movie that came out last week. Experimenter.
Hmm.
It is about Stanley Milgram.
Milgram.
Milgram. Milgram. Milgram.
It's Milgram.
Milgram. A social psychologist, and he in the early 1960s, and he conducted an experiment to see who would obey orders
and who would defy them.
In a way, it was like a precursor to the Stanford Prison Experiment. However, it didn't go haywire and off the rails. He conducted the experiments. They were successful. He developed a you know, some ideas and some findings from it, and they were very controversial.
Yeah,
and they remain controversial.
They remain controversial, but they also remain influential. Like they are constantly cited to this day, but his methods are still constantly questioned. The premise of the thing was that you bring two people in, and one of them picks a piece of paper, and he is the teacher, and the other one is the learner. And they're testing to see if negative inducement makes the learner learn better. So the guy who's the learner goes into another room where he is attached to an electrode. The teacher is given a small shock that's like 45 volts to give him an idea of what the other guy is experiencing, although the other guy's volts start at like 150. And every time he gets one wrong, the teacher is supposed to administer a shock.
Yes.
It has been established that because you've come to find out that the learner is always the same guy. He's a plant. He's part of the experiment.
Yeah.
The learner says, oh, I have a heart condition.
Right.
And
warning you at the very beginning.
Warning at the beginning that he has a heart condition.
To go easy on him, yeah.
And so the, as he makes more mistakes and the voltage goes up in strength.
In voltiness.
In voltiness. He's going, ah, let me out of here. And there's a guy in a gray lab coat, because white was considered too medical,
yeah.
Who's basically telling the teacher, no, we have to continue. You have to finish the experiment. It's very important that you finish the experiment. And people's willingness to keep doing it because this guy is telling him that they have to. And they
and
went
meanwhile,
into,
the guy's never actually being shocked.
The guy's never being shocked. Yeah. His screams are all pre-recorded, yes. I guess, to be consistent.
Yes.
And they originally thought that there would be maybe a small percentage of people who would continue to follow orders. Everybody else would sort of rebel. But no, almost more than half of the people kept doing all the shocks because they were told
more,
to do
more it. Than more than half.
Yeah, like a whopping
majority.
It was the
opposite of what, yeah, like an overwhelming majority would become torturers.
Yeah. And they would, and then sometimes they'd feel bad about it and sometimes not, but they would keep doing it because they were told they had to.
Yeah, the guy in the quote is saying, no, you have no choice. You have to continue the experiment. And a few times in this film, you see people saying, I don't have to do anything you're telling me.
Yeah,
I'm leaving.
Yeah, I do have a choice. I'm out of here.
And so the film is about that experiment and about sort of the fallout of it, and it's kind of a biopic about Milgram.
Yeah.
It follows him in his career
over
into the 80s, and how the experiments, you know, affected his life and affected his career, but mostly about how it affects, you know, people in general and their responses to the evidence that they are capable of barbarism.
Right. Milgram's parents had escaped the Holocaust. And,
yes.
And while he was doing the experiments, or as he was wrapping up the experiments, the Eichmann trial was happening.
Yes.
And so, you know, it kind of became this whole tie-in of like, what are we capable of as human beings, and where do we draw the lines for our own behavior? To not, you know, just blindly do the bidding of others when we know that bidding to be evil. You know, it's almost a biopic of an idea more than it's a biopic
right.
of him. Although
actually,
it is,
yes.
it is about him. And there's a whole thing where he wound up becoming a consultant on a TV movie that was loosely based on him, starring William Shatner and Ossie Davis,
right.
who are played here by Kellen Lutz and Daniel Dennis Haysbert, which are both perfect casting.
Yeah.
And Milgram is sort of aghast at how terrible the movie winds up being. It's called The Tenth Level. I got to look and see if it's on Facebook or on YouTube.
This is such a fascinating movie. It's not...
It's Michael Almereyda, who did Nadia and the Ethan Hawke Hamlet. And
The Twister with Crispin Glover.
The Twister with Crispin Glover, yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s.
And so he'll do things like... have really super artificial background. So,
yes.
So Peter Sarsgaard, who plays Milgram, and Winona Ryder as his wife, will be driving in a car. And it's not even trying to fake the background. Like
no.
It's an intentionally artificial background to them driving.
I love.
And they pull up to a house that is a picture of a house, basically.
Still photograph of a house.
There's a literal elephant in the room a couple
yeah.
of times.
Played by an actual elephant. It's yeah. not digital. I harp on and on this podcast about films that are not aesthetically ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
This is aesthetically ambitious. The filmmaking mirrors the subject in that as part of... As by entering this film, you are part of something whose outcome is unknown, and you don't know where the conductor is going, where the experimenter is going.
Right.
And therefore, along the way, you have to confront the idea that you're not watching reality anymore. You're watching people who turn to the camera and begin speaking. You're watching people who leave what is the... You know, I'm air quoting here, the real world of a film studio and entering what is clearly a film studio.
Where the TV movie is being made.
Where right. the TV movie is being made and where that stuff is all fake. And then the real people are operating in front of completely fake backgrounds.
Yeah, doing a reenactment of this other thing that was also fake, but to us yeah. was real. Yeah,
it's so wonderful to get pulled into this world where nothing is sure. You don't know what's going to happen next visually. And this really does mirror the idea of, is this experiment really happening? Or am I being lied to?
Right.
Am I being faked out by a guy with a tape player in the other
room? Sure, who wants to measure my response.
Oh, man, do I love this movie.
It's really just... it's fascinating to watch. It's streaming. So even though it's a very limited theatrical release, if you're in the U.S., you can get this movie on iTunes or
it's
Amazon.
It's playing in certain cities in art houses.
Yeah.
But it is available right now on iTunes.
Yes.
And we watched it on our couch. Mm-hmm. And I really, really, really strongly recommend this.
Also, you learn that Milgram is the guy who did the experiment that figured out that we are all 6 degrees of separation from each other.
Yes. Oh, and Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder is dynamite.
I've missed Winona Ryder.
She was really good in Show Me a Hero.
She was really good in Show Me a Hero. She's really good in the... oh, my God. The Michael...
Give me a hint.
Can we pause it while I go look this up?
You should keep this stuff in the moment.
I couldn't remember. Thank you for pausing. I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't remember the name of the actor. I couldn't remember the name of the movie. I couldn't remember who it was about. The Iceman.
Yes.
2012 film. The yes. Iceman, starring Michael Shannon.
Right.
About
a contract killer.
Richard Kuklinski, the contract killer. It's an okay movie. His performance is terrific, mm-hmm. as usual, because he's Michael Shannon.
Right.
And Winona Ryder is really good in it, too. So, like, this part of her career where she's...
Black Swan.
And Black Swan. This phase of her career where she's taking supporting character roles.
Mm-hmm.
She's never been better. Seriously, and I loved Heathers and all that stuff she did when she was a kid.
Right.
Back when we were children at the same time, basically. I forget sometimes.
She's younger than us.
That Winona Ryder is essentially... She's 6 years younger than me.
Okay.
And she's 3 years younger than you.
I see.
So, which makes us generational contemporaries.
I suppose so.
Yeah. Kind of like
I thought generations only existed to sell people stuff and create divisions.
We're not
on
talking about that right now.
Oh, I
are
see.
We? No,
okay,
we're not.
Fine. You,
it was like the other day when someone on Facebook, when I put the audiobook pre-order page up, someone who doesn't know me at all, doesn't know the book at all, said, "Who is he, Liz Phair's dad or something?" I was like, "Liz Phair is my age." I was a young man when Exile in Guyville, the album came out.
Mm.
So was Liz Phair. She went to summer camp with Julia Roberts. She's 48, 49, something like that. I'm 51. We're the same age. Is he Liz Phair's dad? Yes. Yes, I'm Liz Phair's father. My book, Exile in Guyville, is about my daughter, Liz Phair.
Anyway, yes, Winona Ryder is great in this. Jim Gaffigan is really good as the learner guy.
Yeah.
A lot of really terrific actors pop up for a couple of scenes in this.
Lori Petty,
Anthony Edwards, Anton Yelchin, what's her face?
Oh, yeah, what's her face?
You know.
I'm blanking.
She plays the... Taryn Manning.
Taryn Manning? I'm a big fan of Taryn Manning.
Yes, so huge fan. You can remember her name. Josh Hamilton.
I actually am a big fan of Taryn Manning.
You are.
I just needed to be reminded that she was in the film.
Yeah, so yeah, it's totally worth checking out.
See this one.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's it. You got a DVD?
I do. I don't think I have recommended this one. But, you know, it's been 5 years. Who the heck knows? Anyway, it's another Girls with Guitars movie that I really like. Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which I think also kind of fits in the category of, you know, butting up against awful record company stuff and banding together as friends to sort of, you know, work through it. Diane Lane, one of her sort of transitional roles from little girl to young adult, in a movie that has turned out to be a kind of a seminal punk film.
That is a seminal punk rock film.
And it's a movie, yes. And a movie that saw Madonna coming.
And the Go-Go's.
And the Go-Go's.
It was kind of actually sort of a little bit-ish.
Based on the Go-Go's?
I think.
Well, it saw Madonna coming before there was a Madonna.
Yeah.
And has even it was dumped by Paramount in its original incarnation and seen by a generation of us on Night Flight on USA Network and is now widely considered to be a really influential film of that period. Our late friend Sarah Jacobson did a short doc about it and a lengthy article about it for Royal Trucks. Where Courtney Love, among other people,
Grand Royal.
Where Courtney Love, among others, proclaimed their love for it. So yeah, if you've never seen Ladies and Gentlemen, the Fabulous Stains, it's a little shaggy around the edges, but it's a really important and entertaining film.
That's my DVD recommendation too.
No.
Yeah, it is.
No,
we're ganging up.
No, you've got a good one.
I forgot what it was.
Oh my God. Partners.
Oh, that's right. Partners sucks.
And it's on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Partners is garbage, and it's on Blu-ray.
Partners is the sitcom version of Cruising, because we needed that.
Yeah. Someone said, hey, Cruising was so great. What if we made it a comedy? They did. It's called Partners. It stars Ryan O'Neal and John Hurt. Ryan O'Neal is the straight cop. John Hurt is the gay cop. They're investigating a serial killer in West Hollywood, California in 1980.
Something like that.
81. It's a comedy. It is the most vile, reprehensible, homophobic, mean-spirited.
It's up there with Staircase.
Essential viewing. You
can't believe that a studio would release this thing.
Yeah, you will not believe your eyes and ears when you see Partners. And if you want to know what the world used to be like...
Yeah, why gay people got so crabby?
Why gay people were so angry when they started being angry in public. A movie like Partners is the reason.
Yeah.
Because it's not that the studio said, hey, let's invent some crazy outlandish homophobia to put in this film. This movie was basically real life. Yeah. I mean, like, this is the way gays were treated back in the day, and it's documented now on film.
Yeah, this is a question of... This is one of those movies where no one stopped and thought, oh, there's nothing... There's nothing wrong with this.
There's nothing offensive to gay people
in this movie. This is how the world is.
Yeah. Gays are like this, and this is what they deserve.
And that is
Partners.
And in the same way that Cruising, among its many areas of interest, is a look at a 1980 New York City that no longer exists.
Yep.
This is a look at early 80s West Hollywood that no longer exists.
Correct.
This movie is rotten, but it's essential viewing.
Dastardly. Yeah. All right. A couple letters.
Sure.
This is from Bone Steel.
Bone Steel!
Boy, I love that name. Dear Dave, sex happening. White.
That's still a good thing?
It is with Bone Steel.
Apparently.
And Professor Duraldi. There has been much talk on the show of late about the Purge movies. At its core, the Purge concept is really interesting. Though that being said, the movies have been okay, but nothing I'm going to keep in my movie rotation. A world has been created where all crime is legal for 12-ish hours. Instead of really exploring this world in any meaningful or interesting way, we get these moralizing tales about cartoony rich people killing the saintly poor, sprinkled with gangs that feel like leftovers from the Warriors. It has been surprising how lackluster they are, as Blumhouse has produced some really great horror. I agree with Dave.
Like Jem and the Holograms.
That they could crank one of these movies out every year. Saw style, and it could work. So since all of Hollywood listens to your podcast, here are some storyline ideas for them. The Purge, : Fires That Burn. This is the story that takes place right at the end of a purge. We get to see the toll the aftermath takes on the world. Crowded ER rooms, trucks driving around scooping bodies off the street, families being notified that their loved ones were killed, etc. The focus of the story would be on a firefighter who has some anger/rage issues of his own, but is trying to keep it together for the sake of his family. Act 1, the family's killed in a car crash. Someone's trying to get a loved one to the hospital. Though through Act 2, we watch our protagonist struggle to not give in to his darker temptations of revenge until the next purge. In the art house version, the movie ends at the beginning of the next purge, and we are left to infer the choice he makes. In the marketable ending, we see him let loose in the third act. The other two are not as long. The Purge movies present the idea that there is a really strong propaganda machine behind the messaging for the Purge. I want to see that propaganda. I want to see that propaganda machine at work. This movie would take place on a Purge night where the revolutionaries that we meet in Anarchy are laying siege to one of the marketing headquarters, assault on Precinct 13 style. Their goal is to take control of the airwaves. The people inside are trying to survive. The last one is, thank you, Bone Steel, Christmas-themed, and is called Purge for the Holidays. As mentioned in Anarchy, people are not purging enough, so the messaging machine has come up with a new gimmick, Purge for the Holidays. This would take place on Christmas Eve into Christmas Day, when the Savior is born to help wash away the blood of the Purge. There has always been a weird underlying religious element to The Purge. This movie would take place in a mall, because that's where I would want to die at Christmas. Thank you for taking the time to read my letter. I just want one of these movies to be really good. I know it was a long letter. Love the show, Bone Steel. P.S. Hollywood, I will not sue if you use my ideas.
Hear that, Hollywood? Run with it. I forgot to mention that the Paranormal Activity movie, this latest one, is also a Christmas movie. Which I think they really just do so they have an excuse to leave the tree lights on all night and so you can see things in the living room. But does anybody leave their tree on all night when go to bed?
You know, I think people who are not us, who have artificial trees that are flame retardant.
With LED lights
with
on
those
them.
Cool LED lights. And I don't mean cool like, oh, that's so cool. I mean like literally
non-hot.
Cool to the touch LED lights. I think some of those people might leave the lights on all night.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's still dangerous to leave something plugged in like that all night. But we always have a real tree.
Yes,
and
we
have old-fashioned C7 ceramic bulbs that that will sear the flesh off your fingers. Because that's Christmas.
Yes. Somebody's got to use the oven mitt to unscrew one.
Yeah. This is from M.A. Ross. Hey, Alonzo, chill bro, Duralde, and Dave, not so freewheeling, White. Speaking of movie trailers and giving it all away, can either of you please ask movie studios to stop placing movie trailers for the movie that I happen to be watching in front of the movie that I've rented? I've already rented the movie. I don't need to be sold on seeing the best bits before I watch it.
Oh, like on a DVD or whatever?
I guess.
That's crazy.
I don't know exactly
what
that means. What does that mean? Does that happen? I don't know that I've ever experienced that.
That's happening. When you press the menu button or the skip.
Yeah, that's
ridiculous.
Yeah. I've frozen up. Hang on, I'm getting a spinning beach ball. Just one moment, please.
Always with the spinning beach ball.
Here we go, and here is a letter from our guest last week, Bill Neal. This isn't my knife life list.
Okay.
But you had mentioned me making a horror list last week. Here is a number of obscure-ish movies for Halloween that I think are guaranteed to be enjoyable and or scary. Feel free to ignore.
Too late.
1978's Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I have to say, I like, unless we're counting that Nicole Kidman one, I like all the Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I like the 50s one. I like the 70s one. I like the Abel Ferrara one.
Yep. The Nicole Kidman one's no good.
No. Yeah. But the other three are terrific.
Session 9.
Is that the one in the mental hospital?
Yeah.
I never saw that one, but I heard it was really scary.
I'll tell you something. Before The Strangers, Session 9 really gave me the creeps. I didn't like the ending of Session 9, and I will not give away that ending. But it's really unnerving while you watch it.
Huh.
So I agree.
Okay.
Race with the Devil, which
yeah.
I love.
Fun.
The Descent.
Which I still haven't seen.
He calls it the best horror of the last 15 years. I'm inclined to agree with you.
Mm.
It is truly good. Truly great.
No, people love yeah. it. I just haven't seen it.
The Hitcher, 1986.
Yes!
Legend of Hell House, which is
ooh, yeah.
wonderful. Suspiria.
Yeah.
Trick or Treat.
We're going to watch that.
He says, you guys rock. Bill Neal, you are 100% knife.
Well, that wasn't his knife list, but yes.
Well, you're still 100% knife.
You are in general, yes, absolutely.
And thanks again for coming on the show. Find this one more. Oh my gosh, why do I keep freezing up here?
Probably something you did.
Hang on. Yeah, that's it for letters.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah, that's it for letters.
So, again, a quick recap. LKTV starts this week.
That's right.
If you're already a subscriber to the show, it'll download automatically.
And how?
Enjoy it for a while, and then later you'll have to pay for it.
But not much.
Not much. We'll have very reasonable
offer. It's
going
to be very cheap.
Yes. Yeah. Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife. Coming soon, Snoopy Come Home. But in the meantime, you can check out... here we go. I'm going to remember them all.
Gentlemen
for Blondes, The Poseidon Adventure, What's Up Doc, Clue, Two for the Road, Josie and the Pussycats, The Apple, White Christmas, and Santa Claus.
We're coming up on Christmas. It's coming on Christmas.
It's coming on Christmas.
You're going to want to get White Christmas and Santa Claus.
Yes, and we'll have a new Christmas one coming up after Thanksgiving as well. More on that later on.
Yeah.
And go pre-order Dave White's audiobook, Exile in Guyville. It is available. You can pre-order it at exileinguyvillebook.tumblr.com.
Or you click the link in one of our social media.
Yes.
Avenues.
Things. And also send us your memories, your favorite moments of the last 5 years.
Let's just say it. Memories of me.
No. Us. Or me. Since I actually make this show happen.
Maybe.
And you just show up and flap your gums. Anyway, do send those to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to share those next week on our 5th anniversary show. And if you want to order any of those extra episodes, they're $1.99 each. PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us which one you want and where you want it sent. As always, we thank Blue for our wonderful theme music. You can find out more about his amazing career at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the Joel Ryan thing, the Sewers of Paris. Who gave us another nice shout out this week. Thank you very much for that, Matt Baum. Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion Cast, the Schmoes Know, Film Spotting SVU, Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes and do leave us a review there. It really helps a lot. I did not look up this week to see who left us new ones, so shame on me. But
we'll read you off next week.
We will, and we appreciate all the ones we get. It really does help people find the show. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us positive feedback there. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Join our Linoleum Knife group page to talk about movies and the show and all sorts of other things with other fans of the program. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast. And, of course, drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Next week, we turn 5.
This many.
And they said it wouldn't last. So we're very excited about that. And again, we really do thank you guys because if no one was listening, we would eventually stop doing it. But you are listening, and so you're helping us build the empire that Linoleum Knife is becoming.
empire.
Well, we got a second show and things and stuff.
Things
and stuff.
We do.
So thank you for that.
Yes.
Join us next time.
Goodbye.